Fantastic. Okay, so a few of our friends are still trickling in from your last break of the day, so perhaps we'll go ahead and just get the introductions out of the way. So thanks for joining us for Advanced Runbook Authoring and Management. Again, my name is Pete Zerger. I am the CTO for an American company called InFront Consulting, joined by my esteemed Swedish colleague.
My name is Anders Bengtsson, principal PFE at Microsoft, doing data center automation and system center.
Anders claims to be a Swedish Viking. Didn't know there was such a thing. He'll tell you about it after two beers. So today we're gonna share with you some of our experiences from the field for Orchestrator Runbook Authoring. So certainly we're going to delve into some advanced concepts there. What we'd like to do, since we're here to talk about the future, right, is to project some of those orchestrator ideas into service management automation and into Azure automation to show you, we really want to help you, take away some ideas for how you can leverage your existing investments in Orchestrator in some of Microsoft's new automation platforms. And here is System Center Orchestrator Unleashed, still for sale.
Yeah.
I think you definitely want to buy a copy.
Or a couple of them. It's a fantastic book. It's really good. I read it a lot every night before going to bed.
On the bedside, in your office, near the commode. So our agenda today, we're going to talk about some advanced orchestrator concepts. This will give us the opportunity to talk to you about some of the things that are possible in Orchestrator, but perhaps not so simple. And we'll project some of those orchestrator challenges into service management automation, into Azure automation, and look at how in the new automation platform we can sometimes perform those same tasks a little bit more easily, a little more effectively, without as much effort. I mean, I certainly, is everybody here an Orchestrator user today, just by a show of hands? So most of you, good?
Show finger.
I really should have asked you to show the finger. I don't know the protocol yet, so some of you picked up on that. As we talk through those orchestrator challenges, we'll then transition into service management automation and finally into Azure automation, just to give you a picture of the future. So perhaps we'll start with runbook logging. So when we automate any process, it's nice to log our process along the way. There's three reasons we typically do this. The first is to figure out where an automation sequence might have failed. The second is really to find out why and how it failed, to see if it's a deficiency in our runbook, a challenge in our process, lack of availability in a remote system. Third, we might want logging for auditing. So certainly with Orchestrator, we can log what and when. We can't log who. So everything runs in the context of a service, so the who behind the execution of a runbook is frequently not known to us. Anything I missed there?
Nah, I think you're good.
Why don't you show us some logging?
Yes. Ta-da. So here we have a runbook that creates user accounts, quite simple. The thing with this one is that we have added a number of invoke runbook activities. So when, as Pete said, when we are building our runbooks, if we want to review anything after, there is nowhere to review it because Orchestrator will not store any data from your runbooks by default. Everything you have to build yourself.
But, so I could turn on activity level logging, no?
You could and fill up your database, so that's not a very good idea. It multiplies the size by 10. And also, we are grooming that data, so there is always a small risk that there is no data when you want to look.
Yeah, those are great points. And also, if you turn on activity level logging, you know, in addition to that tenfold footprint, it's also quite challenging then to go dig through the individual entries in your UI to get to an answer, right?
Exactly. So instead of using activity level logging or text files or send platform events or send emails or anything else, we recommend using a SQL database. So that's what we have here in the background. We have set up a custom database. And then from our runbooks, we just invoke another run book that will write the data to the this logging database. So I have the other run book here. So this is the first one. As you can see, it invokes logging here and here. And then we have the other run book down here. And this run book receives a number of input parameters we have here. And then it makes sure that the format of the data we're writing to the log is the same for all run books. And also, if it's a critical something critical, we generate an alert in Operation Manager straight away.
Yeah, so we've got some key data here. What are you passing into your central logging facility here?
The run book, of course. So we know which run book that generated this log entry. The activity. So if activity fails, we want to know which activity that was. The severity. It must not be a critical or a warning. Maybe it's just information starting working on this server or something like that. And then, of course, description. We need a description there too.
Yeah, so that gives us where, how, and why.
Yeah.
And severity is really a bonus if you'd like to use that for routing, for response routing.
And this is an example of the database. Not very complicated, a couple of columns. The date, the run book, severity, which activity, and then just a short description. And it's really simple now to monitor this database from Operation Manager or whatever tool you're using. And you have it all information in there, and it's easy to run reports and easy to review all the data.
Yeah, absolutely. So you can tap into a SQL database with Excel and Power Pivot. I'm an IT pro and I can spell Visual Studio and I can run the wizard with SQL reporting services. So many options there.
Yeah, there's one more thing that is quite funny. When we do this, you might notice another effect. As this activity here, when that activity fails, it will go this way down here to the write to log. Of course, we want to write to the log if it doesn't work. The thing is that write to log works. So the last activity in the runbook will be green, meaning that the runbook job will result in green. But this runbook didn't work, so we don't want green. We want it to fail. So that's why I have added on a fail runbook activity down here. And this is a query SQL activity. And I just connect to a SQL server that don't exist, so the runbook will fail, just to make sure that if I review my jobs, I want this job to fail. Also, if I have connected this runbook with Service Manager, I don't want Service Manager to move on to the next activity for this user, as we don't have a user.
Yeah, that's a great point. So really a dummy activity there to ensure we fail properly from a results perspective.
Switching over to you now.
Thank you, sir. Well done. So let's talk about state tracking for a moment. So sometimes that last run book I think was a good example. Sometimes we have activities, we have tasks that we're trying to automate that have several steps. So user onboarding, we provision a user account, and we provision a mailbox, and we light up Link, and we spin up a My Site in SharePoint. We create a home drive. So in a situation like that, state tracking could be very important. I want to identify which tasks in that sequence have completed. For example, with that user onboarding, I'm now creating objects in Active Directory, in Exchange, in Link. Those are unique values. So if that process should fail for any reason, whether it's connectivity to the remote systems, whether it's orchestrator failover, I need to know where I failed, so I know where I need to restart, and potentially what it is I have already created that I must clean up. If I'm creating Gunter's user account, and I get two activities in, and I've created part of his assets, I need to go back and clean those up before I begin once again. And with Orchestrator, there's not a native way to do that. So maybe we ask a question before we go into your demo here. So does everybody understand how Orchestrator fails over? So if I have a runbook that's in progress and my Orchestrator runbook server fails, Does it start up on the second? Does it not start up at all? Does it start at the beginning? Does it start at the end?
So if we have multiple runbook servers, multiple servers executing our runbooks in our orchestrator environment, let's say we have two of them, we start over here executing the runbooks job, and if for some reason that server fails, whatever reason, then the runbook will fail over to the secondary runbook server, but it will start from the first activity. Ta-da! A little bit tricky there.
Oh,
so
yeah.
As Pete said, if we then have created a user account, created a mailbox, and just about to create a link account, and we fail over to the secondary runbook server, it will try to create the user account again, the mailbox again, and then the link account.
So it will be very effective as you're developing that solution, and then when you put it into the real world and you don't have control over all of those systems, something somewhere is going to fail, and that 1% will get you. So when we get into state tracking, when we're logging for each task, you're going to notice that we have lots of those logging activities using that central SQL database. So the runbooks are going to grow. Anders, why don't we jump into your state tracking demo here and just have a look at this a little more closely.
It's a fantastic demo.
It's a fantastic idea.
Yeah, here it comes.
Now.
Yeah. So here I have a small runbook creating exactly what we just mentioned. User account, mailbox, link account, setting up a user folder. Everything works fine there. But if it's interrupted here, as we said, it will restart from the first activity. And we don't want that. So what we can do then is to create another external extra database, or at least a table in a database.
Yeah, that's an important point. Just to lock on that for about 30 seconds, that central database where we're logging, we could use that for state tracking by creating an extra table. We might create another table to handle auditing. We might even create another table to store variables. Whatever it is we would like to store, having a central database, I think we call ours orchestrator tool. Doesn't matter what you name it, the concept can be applied to many things we do
in
orchestrator.
But you will realize that you need this database when working with orchestrator. So back to the runbook again. We have this runbook, and if we now want to add on state tracking, it could end up like this. So if you look closely here, now before we do anything, we check with the database if we have already done this. And as you realize now is that you need some kind of unique ID per job or request. So if you're integrating with Service Manager, you can use the service request ID or the incident ID, for example. But you need something to keep track. So what we're doing here is that we check, is the user already created? Check with the database. If it's not, we go up here, we create the user, we update the database, we go down here, check if we have created a mailbox. If not, go up here. If we have created it, we just move on to link, and so on and so on. And as you can understand, this becomes quite complicated after a while.
Yeah, absolutely. And so Anders mentioned something really important there, and that was a transaction ID, so to speak. So for this, provisioning this particular resource, he had a unique identifier. Whether you use Service Manager, you just generate a GUID with PowerShell, doesn't matter. You want some sort of identifier that allows us to come back and see where we are in this particular provisioning sequence.
Yeah.
Now, I notice you have your state tracking here. I notice you don't have any error checking in this one. So with state tracking alone, the size of the runbook has doubled. And if we go back and add our error checking,
exactly. I don't have any logging, I don't have alerting, anything like that. So if we add on that, we will have like 10, 15 more activities. And then we get into what we said at MMS, that you shouldn't have too many activities, divide into functions and so on. And then you end up like 10 different runbooks and it gets even more complicated.
Yeah, so you might break these runbooks out into one runbook for creating the user, one for the mailbox, etc. That concept of modular, bite-sized runbook, so to speak, could become very important.
So what do we have here, Pete?
Ooh. Service Management Automation.
So this is SMA. Do you want to say some words about SMA? How many of you have been using SMA so far?
So how many of you have seen SMA? Let's get that. Now, how many of you, by leaving your hands up, how many of you have touched SMA and created at least one run book? Okay, so that's about what we would expect. So here's going to be some of your first motivation to take some steps into service management automation. So what do you have here, Anders?
So this is the Windows Azure Pack portal, and we use it to connect to SMA. So SMA is just another engine, and Pete will get into all the details later on. But if you don't want to do everything from PowerShell, controlling SMA, you can connect it to Windows Azure Pack, and you get this portal where you can build your run books, and you can fix all your settings and so on. So you don't need to deploy a private cloud. You can just use Windows Azure Pack and connect it to SMA.
Quiz, how many virtual machines do I need to deploy to get just SMA running? So SMA only as opposed to a full private cloud. One. Where's your finger? With finger, you get extra points. You get an extra beer with finger. There
it's
we
so
go.
Sweet.
That's exactly right. So I can spin this up in 15 minutes. The media, it shipped with the orchestrator ISO.
Yeah. So here we have almost the same runbook as we had in Orchestrator and Runbook Designer. So I have just created a small, like a little bit here. This is where we should have the create mailbox code. This is where we should have the create link account code. But what you can notice is this one. No, not that one. Here. Checkpoint workflow. Each time I run that in my runbook, SMA will take the entire state of the runbook and store it in the database.
Okay, so that was important. It's going to store it in our...
It's actually the job. It's storing the job.
Okay, so is it storing that in the custom central logging database you just created?
No, in the SMA database. That's the really nice thing here.
Okay, so we get state tracking, checkpointing for free with SMA. So we're all of that, orchestrator-based, central logging functions, all of those extra runbooks replaced by checkpoint-workflow.
Exactly. So each time we add this line here, we will save the runbook job into the database. And if it stopped for some reason, we can just resume exactly where it was. And the cool thing here is that we don't have to wait for failure. We can use it, for example, for patch management. Then we can just pause all our running runbooks, patch our servers, move them around, whatever we need to do, and then just resume all the jobs a little bit later.
And how many people in here can at least borrow somebody else's PowerShell script and turn it into your own? Is everybody working with PowerShell? Yeah, for the most part? Good, good. So you'll notice here that what Anders has is really PowerShell just wrapped inside of an inline script tag. So there are lots of great PowerShell workflow tutorials out there on the internet. They're going to show you how to take PowerShell scripts and move them into PowerShell workflow so you can reuse a lot of that automation you're already writing right here.
Yeah. So that's it about checkpointing.
Okay.
State tracking, over to you.
Thank you, sir. All right, so let's talk about looping. The looping is important in a number of scenarios, one of which is what we just looked at, so user provisioning. Anytime I need to provision an asset with a unique value, a username, a virtual machine, etc., I may need to loop to go make sure that the value I'm about to use is unique. So whenever we have that uniqueness requirement, looping is really important. Can be very valuable when I'm deploying something, anything, frankly, and I want to make sure that that asset is now available. I deploy a website to Azure, to my private cloud, whatever. I may want to go check that website, and I might need to loop a few times as the website or the virtual machine or asset X takes a few minutes to deploy. If I'm integrating with Operations Manager, I might use looping to make sure that when I restart a service, it eventually comes back up. Or when I restart a virtual machine, that reboot was eventually successful. Let's have a look at looping.
Yep. Ta-da. So here we have a runbook that will create a computer account. And the way we want the computer account is that the first server should be named Demo Server 1, the next one Demo Server 2, and then 3, 4, 5, and so on. If we delete Demo Server number 3, we would like the next server to be named Demo Server number 3.
Okay, so if we provision 500 virtual machines, but I deprovisioned some of those.
You want to use the
I'd
names
like to
again.
Go back in there and reclaim some of those names and reuse them, so I don't get up to virtual machine 500,000,
exactly.
Etc. Yeah.
Exactly.
Sure.
So what we can do here in Orchestrator is that we can set a counter to zero, then we can invoke another runbook, and I have that one here. And what this one is doing is that it gets the counter number, query Active Directory, does this machine exist? If it exists, it sends back a return code saying use this number. If it doesn't exist, it sends back another return code. And back to the master runbook, this one I have configured looping on. So this one will loop until it gets a correct exit code. So it will just invoke that other runbook over and over and over and over again until it gets a suitable server name.
So what if I've used the first 100 available server names?
Then you will loop 101 time.
Okay.
Yep.
So this would be a great example of maybe non-fantastic automation.
This is like fantastic in a non-fantastic way, you could say.
That's Swedish for bad.
So. Watch it, there is a lot of Swedes here. Yeah. So if you have this in your environment, it might end up in a little bit of a bad mood because it will loop and loop and loop. And as Pete said, let's say you have 500 test servers already. And also thinking about that each loop will take like a half minute, something like that. Yeah, so if you have used your first 500 demo machines, it will take, it's like you automate a process that would be faster to do manually.
Exactly. So yeah. That's a challenge for sure. So that's something that doesn't scale so well.
So what you could do instead is what we have here.
Okay.
You could do a bit of PowerShell.
A bit, show us a bit of PowerShell,
yeah, of
how about?
So here we have 12 lines of code. We query Active Directory once, and then we just work with the result of that query.
What is that in German? That Stück piece? So we got a bit of PowerShell. So what can I do with this?
Yeah, the nice thing here is that it takes like a couple of seconds and you will have your server name and then you will create the computer account for you.
Indeed.
And once you have it in here, now it's PowerShell, meaning that you can move it to.
So I can move this to SMA.
Exactly.
And
very nice.
And as long as I'm using the right sort of commandlets, which we are here, we're not using anything unusual, nothing that requires interactivity, I can pick this up from Orchestrator, I can move this into SMA, I can maybe even move this into Azure Automation, more on that in a bit, but quick and easy. So anything that I build like this, much of what I build like this in Orchestrator, where you don't have an integration pack, you build PowerShell, we can pick a lot of that up, port it across.
Yeah.
Take from A and move to B.
So over to you.
So just to recap here, so we've talked about logging and state tracking. You see all of those things are possible in Orchestrator, right? So when we look at logging and state tracking both, what we work pretty reasonably hard for in Orchestrator, we get for free in SMA. So all of that central state tracking we were doing in Orchestrator that involved, you know, custom run books and a custom, you know, central state tracking table in a database, we get with no work in SMA. Waiting for integration packs can be challenging. Eh? So sometimes, you know, I know when Microsoft acquired Opalis, which became Orchestrator, we lost some of those third-party packs that were free, didn't we? And now we don't see new packs. So SMA, you know, since it's PowerShell workflow-based, doesn't have that problem. Orchestrator was a 32-bit application. It liked to call the 32-bit version of PowerShell. That could be challenging as well. That's pretty well handled out on the internet now. If you use the right PowerShell template, which I think we have on the System Center Central website, out on Anders' blog, we leverage PowerShell remoting very heavily in Orchestrator for reliability. We haven't talked about parallel execution. This is actually my favorite. So we're going to get to that one in just a second, but I want to talk to you for just a minute about SMA before I put the man behind the curtain on his parallel execution demo. So service management automation is Microsoft's new automation engine based on PowerShell workflow. It almost doesn't feel new to me anymore because it's more than a year old. It's just, you know, most of us are still using Orchestrator, right? Me too. it's included on the Orchestrator installation media. It takes one virtual machine. Because it's based on PowerShell workflow, we get all of those really nice features for free, plus the massive library of PowerShell scripts out on the internet that are at our avail. So I think we got our SMA poll out early. I think we know where everybody lies in their SMA experience, so that's good. So let's talk about the architecture here. If you understand Orchestrator architecture, which is fairly simple, right? You're going to find SMA is quite similar in many respects. So we have a database, just like we do in Orchestrator. We have a RESTful web service, an OData web service, much as we do in Orchestrator. We have SMA workers. So the Orchestrator runbook server is called an SMA worker. And we can have multiple SMA workers to provide redundancy. We can make calls into that web service through PowerShell, through web-based means. Windows Azure Pack is going to leverage that in some instances. What we really like here is that SMA and Orchestrator can talk to one another. So we can make them talk to one another because they each have a RESTful web service. So I can make calls in one direction and I can make calls into another, into the other from the opposite direction. And really, it just comes down to what each does best. There are a lot of reasons why we might use each. We'll get to that in just a sec. So let's talk about parallel execution. So when we think about parallel execution, we're talking about provisioning multiple anything. So let's say we want to provision 100 virtual machines. And I know that my fabric, Hyper-V, VMware, don't care, can support maybe 25 at a time. So maybe I want to provision quickly. That's the whole point of automation, right? Perhaps I want to provision 100 at once, 25 at a time, based on my fabric capacity. Orchestrator will provision 100 virtual machines for me. It will do it very obediently, one request at a time. It's kind of like the Autobahn with only one lane, which can feel a bit more like a traffic jam. In SMA and with Azure Automation, because they are based in PowerShell workflow, which includes the concept of parallel execution. In fact, PowerShell workflow allows us to specify that a portion of our runbook will execute in parallel and others will execute in serial, as we require. It's going to be a very simple task, frankly. So what we maybe can't do at all reliably in Orchestrator is going to be elementary in SMA. What do you have, Anders?
I have a nice demo of this, of course. So parallel execution in Orchestrator, we can try to do it in a couple of different ways. We can, for example, try to invoke the same runbook 10 times, almost. That works as long as you don't want 11 or 9, because then you need to go in and edit your runbook before you start it. So that won't work, really. Nice. Then, of course, we could do some kind of looping, like I have here, where I have a counter measuring the number of servers I have created so far, comparing that number and then creating more, checking the counter again, and then I invoke the same runbook again. So a little bit of a loop, what we have in the previous demo. This could work as long as not two or more manage to start it at the same time as we are using the same counter. So, because then it will affect each other. So, because it's the same counter from different runbook jobs, so it will affect each other. So, it's not really good.
So, you just said that could work. Is there anybody that works at a company where could work is okay? And can I have a job there?
It's like an alpha version.
Indeed.
It might work.
Indeed. Yeah. So this is going to be problematic for a number of reasons if we want to get any faster than one. So definitely in a large enterprise, it's going to be problematic where because you may want to do multiple multi-provisioning for multiple requests at the same time. So you may have parallel execution across multiple requests.
Yeah, it will be quite complicated. And of course, you can solve that with the different counters and temporary databases and so on. But yeah, it would be like a nightmare with activities. like indeed. A swamp. Yeah, like a activity swamp. So what we can do instead is, of course, using SMA that is quite good at this. So we pass in a parameter, number of servers we need, and then for number server number one to whatever number of servers we want.
You see parallel, the magic word.
Yeah, the magic minus parallel there. So we will for all of these, we will be building the servers at the same time. And then this is quite nice because we can do one part in parallel, and then we can go back and do a lot of stuff without parallel execution. And then we can do parallel execution again. So we can be swifting within the runbook.
Indeed. Fantastic. So that's a great part. We can drop in and out of parallel back to serial, back to sequential as we need.
Exactly. And if, as you can see here, I have added a sleep here, start sleep 3 minutes. That's because I thought you didn't want to sit here and wait too long. So this runbook takes 3 minutes per server it's creating, and I have exactly the same in Orchestrator. And if we look at the result, we can see that Orchestrator...
Okay, so zoom in and let's just explain a result. So you put a delay, you put a sleep counter of 3 minutes into your runbook in
both Orchestrator and SMA.
Okay, so here we are.
So instead of creating the machines, I'm just writing the timestamp to a text file. And we can see that Orchestrator, it's keeping up, but it takes around 3 minutes for each one. And if we look in SMA, we can see that we are building all the machines at, the same second, almost exactly the same time.
So you had a runbook that ran for 3 minutes, but because we use that parallel parameter, it ran for 3 minutes all at the same time to provision all those servers.
And then, of course, as you said, it's quite important to check your fabric to make sure that you can build 10 servers at the same time.
Yeah, so if you're the automation man or woman, you may want to talk to the fabric, the hypervisor man or woman, to make sure you know how much parallel activity they can stand to see if they are up to everything you can bring.
Great. So over to you, Pete.
Excellent. Thank you, sir. So how we integrate these two platforms is often driven first by, and in no particular order, frankly, it's often driven by which tool will perform a specific task most effectively. And a lot of times, it's based on convenience. So if you've been using Orchestrator, there are some things you've created already that you maybe rely on a lot. And there are probably a list of other things that you would like to create that you haven't got around to creating yet. And so you can make some decisions about where you create those. But as you make that move, you know, certainly nobody wants to leave behind everything we have in Orchestrator. I look at all of my Orchestrator runbooks, and it's like my child. You know, I don't want to leave all of that behind. I'd like to use it for a while. And Orchestrator is great for System Center integration, for ITSM integration, because we can get integration packs, you know, not only for Service Manager, but for CA, HP, ServiceNow, BMC, Atrium. So lots of enterprise platforms we can connect with using activities, very drag and drop and easy. On the other hand, maybe there are some things you haven't built where parallel execution is very important, where state tracking is needed, where looping to go find unique values, for example, is you know, critical. SMA is going to be fantastic for that. It's actually going to be much less work than Orchestrator. It's going to be small PowerShell workflow runbooks as opposed to many nested parent-child runbook relationships in Orchestrator. Let's take a fictional scenario here. User requests a VM. Let's say a user requests multiple VMs, perhaps. Let's say in a SharePoint web page, in a SharePoint list. Maybe you're not a service manager shop. How many service manager users in here? Yeah, so we'd be losing most of you here. Everybody's got a SharePoint site, right? So I can create a list in SharePoint where I can capture that request. Orchestrator is fantastic for monitoring SharePoint lists. I can make it go watch that list for new entries, and it just watches over and over, checks every little bit. If I want to provision a whole bunch of virtual machines, I could use Orchestrator to, instead of provisioning everything from Orchestrator, I could make Orchestrator just trigger a little runbook over in Service Management Automation, over in SMA, to do that work in parallel, better, faster, etc. And when I'm done, I can use my PowerShell and SMA to call Orchestrator to trigger a runbook in the other direction to go update Service Manager, HPCA, or whatever your ITSM, your CMDB platform is, to say, hey, the request is done. So I can make these two talk in a very reliable fashion and use each tool for what it does best and leverage all of that work I've done in Orchestrator over the last, you know, two, three, four years, depending on where you are. And everybody's happy, so we can move forward, but it doesn't have to hurt quite as much. It doesn't sting when we can reuse what we've built. Show us what you have here.
So here I have the SharePoint list. Ta-da!
Yay.
So here we can create a new list item. We can fill in what kind of server we need, where it should be deployed, in which location, number for servers, and so on. And what's happening in the background is that Orchestrator will pick this up. So we have a runbook monitoring that SharePoint site with the SharePoint integration pack. And as soon as there is a new item in the list, it picks it up, gets the location from the list item. And if the location is, for example, in this case, private cloud, it goes down here and evokes Virtual Machine Manager. If it's test or development, it goes down here and runs a script. Let me zoom this one.
Okay, so to be clear, you're invoking a runbook in SMA.
Yes.
From Orchestrator.
Yeah, so I'm actually first running a remote command to my SMA server because I don't have that PowerShell module installed on this machine. But then I do use this one, start SMA runbook, the web service address.
And you're using the SMA commandlets, yeah?
Yeah, exactly. And the runbook name, and then I pass on the parameters to the SMA runbook. So from my Orchestrator runbook, with these like two, three lines of code, I invoke a runbook in SMA, and I pass on a couple of parameters there.
So three lines, well documented on the internet, out on contoso.se as well.
Absolutely.
Quick and easy.
We go into SMA, and we are building the machine. So in this case, I wanted to have a couple of machines in Microsoft Azure, and I choose to do that in SMA, even if there is an Azure integration pack for Orchestrator.
Has anybody tried to provision Azure Virtual Machines with the Orchestrator integration pack for Azure? A couple of you, yeah? So that's tough, right? You wind up in PowerShell, don't you? Yeah, okay, the finger was down. So we'd wind up using, you know, to provision in Azure, typically in Orchestrator, we would wind up, if it's Azure, Amazon, either one, we're typically going to wind up in PowerShell.
Yeah. And it's also, if we want to have multiple machines, it's just better to do it in SMA so we can get them in parallel. So after this machine or the machines are deployed, we invoke another SMA runbook with this command down here. So this is invoke runbook in SMA. Just invoking another one, passing on a parameter. And if we look at this runbook, I borrow this runbook from Tiander. What it do is it starts an Orchestrator runbook and pass on parameters. Woohoo! It's like a loop. So we started in SharePoint to Orchestrator to SMA, and now we're going back to Orchestrator again. And back in Orchestrator, we invoke this runbook that will just update the SharePoint list and upload the remote desktop file to the SharePoint list. Yes, so it's easier for people to go in there and pick up the remote desktop shortcut. But the thing here, or the idea here, is that we use the engine that we like most for that scenario. So we started with monitoring the SharePoint site. That's easy to do from Orchestrator, so we do that in there. Then when we start deploying the machines, we use SMA because it can do it in parallel. We have state tracking, checkpointing, all that. Then we move back to Orchestrator because we want to update, for example, in Service Manager and SharePoint. It's easier to do it in there.
So out there in the real world, do you have customers in production actually doing this? So I know you're visiting customers all the time.
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
Yeah. So some customers, they are really into PowerShell already, so then it's quite easy to start with SMA. And even if they are into Orchestrator, it's easy to realize how many benefits you get from SMA for free, even if you can't write a single line of PowerShell workflow code, because you will find it.
Yeah, so it's a very important decision point, right? If I haven't built it yet, which platform is going to give me the easiest route to achieving my goal? And the answer may be different. You may still wake up some mornings and have something you need to do that today is a little bit easier in Orchestrator than it might be in SMA.
Yeah, so you just mix them together any way you want.
Yeah.
Over to you.
Okay,
yep.
Thanks for that, Anders. So let's talk about Azure automation for a moment. And I'm not here to sell you Microsoft Azure. I don't get paid extra for saying that out loud, but we do want to just draw that connection to the future. Azure automation is a service. It's really SMA in Microsoft's data center. So think SMA as a service hosted in Microsoft Azure. It has its own VMs under the hood, fully resilient, et cetera. Azure Automation has its own set of PowerShell commandlets. But what you build for SMA, because it's based in PowerShell workflow, I can pick up and I can bring over to Azure Automation because it's based in PowerShell workflow. The difference is I don't have responsibility for all of that fabric. So in some senses, it's actually, you know, easy, convenient, et cetera, in a way that, you know, Orchestrator and SMA are not. So if I'm, you know, looking to, you know, work with SMA and I want to build zero virtual machines, I could actually just go log into my Azure subscription. How many if you have MSDN, yeah, you can get $150, $200 a month for free, right? So you can go play with this with zero virtual machines out in your MSDN sub automatically. But very similar. Not only in function, but in appearance. What do you have here?
I prepared a really good demo here.
Is that subliminal? He says that before every demo. He never says, you know, I prepared an okay demo.
Yeah, but each demo has been the best demo so far.
Demo. Look away.
But it's like the first demo, the second demo, that's the best demo so far. And then the third demo, that's the best demo so far. Because they only get better. Yeah. Okay. So here we have Azure Automation. Mm-hmm. Maybe you thought it was SMA.
But it looks very similar, right? SMA is part of WAP, and Windows Azure Pack was by design meant to look like Azure, right? So they're similar in appearance, same in terminology, right? We still have workers and all that.
Yep. So here we have Azure Automation, and it's the same dashboard as in SMA, and we can move over to our runbooks. And we can auto runbooks the same way as we do in SMA, same with language. So in this scenario, I have a number of virtual machines running in Microsoft Azure. And as you know, you pay per minute for your virtual machines. So in my case, I want to scale down my virtual environment during night because I'm sleeping some nights. So I want to scale down during night, but some of the machines I just want to scale down, I don't want to turn them off. And of course, I want to automate this. So I've created a runbook here that reads from a SQL database that I also have in Azure. So I have a database here with settings how my machine should behave. So during day, they should be a small size. And during night, the first one should be turned off, and the second one should be extra small.
All right, Viking, let's just question right away. So you're using a database in Azure as your reference database for your VM restart. So could
exactly.
could I just have SQL in an Azure VM?
You could. But it's just cooler
this way. But it feels cooler this way. Okay, I just wanted to point out, you know, we don't have to store this in Azure SQL. We could put this in a traditional Azure, in a traditional SQL instance, rather, if we wanted.
Yeah, we could, of course.
Not trying to ruin your party. But
say again?
So that not trying to ruin your party, I was just saying. Go ahead.
So we have the database here with the settings, and then I have my runbook. Azure Automation runbook that it reads from the database and reconfigure my machines.
Go back to that reference table, if you would, and zoom for me. I'm quite old, so the text is small. So you see, really all he's doing is just storing some simple information here so he can minimize the spend, something you would do without question. You know, this is something you might actually do in your on-prem assets if you're looking at a test and dev environment, right? We don't want to leave things running 24/7 if we don't have to in a shared fabric of any sort. So whether you put self-service on it and call it private cloud or you just have enterprise virtualization, this same concept can be taken right out of Azure and put right into SMA to interact with your Hyper-V, vSphere, whatever you like.
Exactly. So we have the runbook running, and we can configure a schedule and tell it to run every morning. So this runbook runs every morning, and it scales up all my virtual machines. It starts some virtual machines that was turned off during night. And then in the evening, I have another runbook, the evening stop runbook, that then reads the same database and shuts down my machines and reconfigures some machines. So it's really SMA in as a service in Azure. So you don't have to run all the fabric, all that stuff, more upgrades and so on. You're just building your runbooks here as you want to do. That's what we actually want to do.
Yeah, and I couldn't help but notice that you're using the schedule option here. So I could maybe create some runbooks in SMA and Azure Automation and use that scheduler to make them kind of monitor things, sort of.
Yeah, you could do, there's a couple of different ways if you want to do monitoring runbooks in SMA or in Azure Automation. I wrote a blog post about that.
I was about to ask you if there was anybody adventurous enough to try it.
Yeah, so you can read it on the blog because it's quite a lot of explanations there. I think I'm switching over to you.
So I remember the first time Anders and I even talked about SMA and Orchestrator and SMA together. A lot of what we're showing you here today were things we were only talking about at that time. It had just been released. So I think the good news is here. You've developed a lot of automation in Orchestrator today. And a lot of the groundwork that needed to be laid, that foundational work that needed to be completed to allow us to leverage our existing investments in Orchestrator, not be worried about walking away from that 100% when we build an SMA or we build an Azure Automation, that work has been done. So triggering runbooks from Orchestrator and SMA and vice versa, done. Dealing with, say, a schedule type runbook in SMA and Azure Automation, done, out on Contoso SE. And now, 18 months more of samples out there on the internet. So lots of the, as we'd say in Texas, somebody has taken the lumps for you, right? The hard part is done. So we've got logging, state tracking, parallel execution, looping, and Orchestrator plus SMA together. So Anders, last question, could I actually make Orchestrator and Azure Automation work together? You didn't answer that.
You could.
So I can go in two directions there as well?
From
Orchestrator to Azure Automation and vice versa?
You could. It's just a PowerShell command. Commandlets. So you could. Absolutely.
There we go. He thought he was going to get away without answering that one. So really two bi-directional integration. Anyway, you slice it. So with that, we are going to conclude the session and see if you have any questions. I know it's been a long day. Concepts, scenarios, yeah.
Can we expect a product that merges the best of both, Orchestrator and SMA, in one product, one solution?
So I'm not going to say anything I can't say, but I'm going to look at Anders and see if there's anything he has to say. So what I might say is I find Microsoft makes announcements, major announcements about new functionality at major technical conferences, like TechEd. So I think I would say tune in and let's see what happens in October in Barcelona. So I wouldn't be surprised if Microsoft were doing some work in the background to make SMA better. and easier for Orchestrator customers. Just a guess. Any other questions? Any scenarios you're thinking about? We can help you how to do. Do you just want to go have a beer? That's okay too. So we hope you've had a good day one. Hope that the DevOps talk this morning is at least beginning to resonate. So there's a donation, remember, for every bit of feedback. So if you will give us feedback on the session through the tool so we can do better for you next year, we would appreciate that.
Absolutely. And as always, be honest but generous when filling in the feedback.
Well, be mostly generous. You can be honest if you want. That's optional, but generous for sure. Hey, so guys, enjoy the conference. Hope you had a good day one. We'll see you tomorrow.
Thank you.
We'll see you at the party.